All right, now I'd like to introduce our main speaker tonight, Butch M.
My name is Butch Maslin. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. I want to thank the Fourth Dimension Group and Chris for the invitation to come up and take part in the meeting tonight. I consider it an honor and a privilege to be here. I'm not saying that because it sounds nice, or I need you to like me. I'm saying that from the bottom of my heart. I'm a guy who considers it a privilege to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a guy who considers it a privilege to come here and be with you fine folks, so I want to thank you for that opportunity. The most important thing that I can do here tonight is to welcome those folks who got up and got their chips tonight, and those folks in their first 30 days. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Welcome. There is an energy in this room tonight that is, you just cannot notice it, can you? You just cannot notice it. Can't help but notice it, I should say. That's better. Can't help. That's not always the case. And so I'm happy to be here 2 days before Christmas. This is just a hell of a deal, isn't it? This is a good deal. I got this, some folks from Toronto. You know, if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you don't know this yet, you'll find out. But our steps, our program, our process is designed to deflate our ego. That is the problem of the alcoholic, the ego. That's our problem, and our steps are designed, and our traditions, to deflate that ego. And so if you are new to Alcoholics Anonymous, haven't done your steps yet, or maybe you're not so new to Alcoholics Anonymous, haven't done your steps, you can count on your fellow members to deflate your ego. Some folks from Toronto there said to me, boy, we come all the way to Florida and you just spoke at our group, we got to listen to you. A lady come up to me and said, I heard that you're a good speaker, I hope you don't disappoint me. I got a call one time, I just got to tell you that first, this gentleman right here said, just talk as long as you want. You got me a room here tonight. I'm not leaving back for Naples till 7 tomorrow morning. Sit back and relax. I got a call one time from a fellow from Ottawa, which is our nation's capital, about 5 or 6 hours from where I live. I live just north of Toronto. And he said to me, this is so-and-so, is this Butch Maslin? I said, yes, it is. He said, we have a conference here at such and such a date. We're wondering if you would come and talk at our conference. I said, well, I took a look at that date. I said, it's a free date. I said, but let me ask you something. I said, did you just have the one convention in Ottawa? He said, "That yes, we do. I said, at the Crown Plaza Hotel. He said, yes, it is. I said, well, I think it's only fair to tell you that I've talked at your conference 4 or 5 years ago. He said, are you sure? I said, I just told you where it was, didn't I? He said to me, he says, I've been on this committee. I've been going to this conference for many, many years. He says, I don't remember you. I said, I have that effect on people. I said, listen, why don't you do this? Why don't you check with your committee? If you want me to come, I'd be happy to come, but if they think it's too soon and you want to get someone else, I fully understand. So he said, good idea, I'll talk to them, I'll get back to you in a couple days. A couple days later, he called me back. He said, listen, Butch, he said, I've talked to everybody on the committee. Nobody remembers you. And that's probably how it should be. That's how it should be. It's good to come here and see some friends. And I met Archie. I knew his sponsor. He knew my sponsor. We know a lot of the same people. I saw my friend Wayne. I haven't seen, I don't think, since San Antonio at the last International and stuff. And to see some old friends and stuff here tonight is just a great deal. I really and truly am happy. And when I say that I'm happy to be here, I really, really am happy to be here, because alcoholics don't always get where they're going. Drinking alcoholics seldom get where they're going, huh, Dave? Seldom get where they're going. But sometimes even sober alcoholics don't get where they're going. I'm going to tell you a quick story about that deal. Let me first of all tell you there's a time in my life I was not allowed in the United States of America. Let me add right now, nor should I have been. They said, we have enough people like you here already. We don't need to import them. So I applied to the United States Department of Justice for a waiver that would allow me to come into your great country. I have it at home right now, back in Naples, our place. It's a piece of paper about that big. United States Department of Justice has my name on it. Allows me to come into the USA on humanitarian grounds. I don't even know what that means. The other thing I should tell you is when I got that waiver, I don't know if you ever misplace things, but I can, so when I got that waiver, I made 25 photocopies, just to be safe. Now, I'm going to go to the other thing when I come here, they want to know where I'm going. They don't want to know I'm going to Florida. They don't want to know that I'm going to Port Richey, Florida. They want to know precisely where I'm going. I don't know why, but they seem to want to know. So anyway, I'm going to a conference in Illinois a number of years ago. I get up early Friday morning. I like to go to the convention early. I come to the convention to be a part of. I don't go to a convention to talk. I come to be a part of. And I get all my gear together. I couldn't find my waiver. I said to my wife, I said, where's my waiver? Like it's her job to know where my waiver is. She said, I don't know, Butch, it's wherever you've put it. I said, no, it's not, you've lost it. She said, get one of those photocopies, get going, you're going to miss your flight. So I get all my gear, I get my photocopy, I go to Pearson International Airport. Please don't misunderstand what I'm about to say. Our Homeland Security, our border custom agents do a wonderful job protecting our borders. God bless those men and women. But I think when they go to Border Patrol school, they teach them how not to smile. Huh? Serious people there. So I go up and I give this guy the stuff. I hand him all my gear. Young guy, I give him the waiver. He looks at me. He says, this is a photocopy. I said, yes, sir. The original's at home for safekeeping. Lies just fall out of my mouth. Just fall out. Natural. I don't need to think. I need to think about truth. Lying just like that. Rapid fire. Just done. Right? He said to me, you can't travel on a photocopy. He said, you have your I-94 form. I pulled out this form. He says to me, that's the wrong form. I thought, this isn't shaping up well. He said, you go over there, fill out the right form, and you got to go see somebody about this photocopy because you cannot travel on a photocopy. I thought, I'm not going to Illinois today. So I go over, I fill out the right form, and I got one of those keen alcoholic minds. That we only hear about from the alcoholic. You will not hear about that keen alcoholic mind at the Al-Anon meeting, I'll tell you that right now. And I fill out the stuff and I watch. I wait till his line's full. I see a more gentle man like my new friend Dave here. I thought, I'm going to go to his line. So I go to his line. I give him all the gear. I give him the waiver. He says to me, where are you going? I said, I'm going to Illinois. He says, what's your purpose of business? I said, I'm going to talk at a convention, Alcoholics Anonymous. He said to me, what address are you staying at? Oh, Jesus. I'd forgot to get the address. I said, I don't know, sir. He said, you don't know where you're going? I said, no, I don't. I said, but somebody's going to pick me up at the airport and take me there. He says to me, who's picking you up at the airport? I said, I don't know. He says to me, let me get this straight. Somebody you don't know is picking you up, taking you somewhere you don't know where you're going. I said, yes, sir, that's correct. He says to me, what are you going to talk about? Oh, Jesus. And before I could answer him, he holds up his hands and says, hold it, let me guess. You don't know. So I'm happy to be here. My home group's the Three Legacy Group, Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a group guy. I believe in the home group. I believe that the home group is the heartbeat of AA. That's not podium banter. It's not something I've read in the pamphlet, though I did. I believe that. I believe that with all my heart. The heartbeat of AA, the home group. I belong to a group where all three legacies are in place. Where, yes, personal recovery is there. We study and teach the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous out of our text. Believe so strongly in that. But there's more. There's more. We operate under unity. where those 12 traditions are in place, they're not just something stuck up on a wall, where they're taught and understood, and we operate as a group under those traditions. Where we believe in service as a group, where it's not just the same one or two individuals constantly doing everything, but we operate and function together as a group. We have committees that go to that detox every Monday and Thursday night to make sure those new people are at our meeting. We have a committee that goes into that detox on Tuesdays to talk about what a home group is, what sponsorship is, what AA is and what it isn't, what we do and what we don't do. We say to new people, join a group and get a sponsor, like they somehow know what that means. Huh? I belong to a group. I want to thank the people right at the door and shook our hands when we walked in here tonight, because I'm a guy that thinks that's the single most important thing that we do is a home group. The single most important thing that we do as a home group is to be at that door when that new guy or new gal walk through for their first meeting. Because an in-depth version of step four doesn't mean a damn thing to them. But a warm handshake, welcome, come in and get a cup of coffee and sit here with us, means a great, great deal. I love the enthusiasm. I believe enthusiasm. I think enthusiasm is contagious. I think it's important for new people to see that enthusiasm, that we're not a glum lot, that we absolutely insist upon enjoying life. And when we get sober, life gets even better, not less. Huh? Don't you love that enthusiasm? You heard it in the room here tonight, huh? Just all that? Don't you love it? All that chatter, that buzz in the room, it's just like being in a bar. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. I love it. Everybody talking, nobody listening. Nobody listening. Alcoholics, the most self-centered people in the world. You ever tried to talk to somebody after the meeting? 10 people walk up and say, I don't mean to interrupt. Oh, yes, you do. I know there's no such thing as a bad group, but there's some trying hard. Hard. Like a morgue, for God's sake. And I believe, fellow alcoholics, I truly believe, that when a guy or gal walk into a room where those things are in place, their chances of recovery become much greater than if they walk into a room where none of that's happening. So I'm incredibly grateful to be here at a strong three legacy group, Alcoholics Anonymous. Thanks for the invitation. I did drink, I promise you that. On September the 21st, 1989, two men came to my mother's house practicing Alcoholics Anonymous in its purest form. In its purest form. Now that should tell you something right there, though, shouldn't it? My mother's house. Somewhere every 33-year-old self-respecting alcoholic should be with his mummy. Two men came to my mother's house practicing Alcoholics Anonymous in its purest form. They made the effort to leave their homes, drive to my mother's house, came to my mother's house and talked to me about their drinking. They did not talk to me about my drinking. They did not tell me I shouldn't drink, I shouldn't drug, I should go to detox, I should go to... They didn't tell me nothing. Those two men came to my mother's house that night, talked to me about their drinking, and told me what had happened in their lives since they came to something called Alcoholics Anonymous. Would I like to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous with them? I was a helpless, hopeless, chronic alcoholic. I'd been running the streets since I was 13 years old, drinking whiskey and sticking needles in my arms. And those two men came to my house, my mother's house that night, took me to my first meeting, Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been with you ever since that night. Ever since that night. I don't know what to tell you about that, but I want to tell you that I'm extremely grateful for that experience. Because I know that's not everybody's experience that comes to Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot of people come to Alcoholics Anonymous, return to drinking, and come back to AA. A lot of people come to Alcoholics Anonymous, return to drinking many times and come back to AA. Some people come to Alcoholics Anonymous, return to drinking, and never come back to AA. But that is my experience, and I'm grateful for it. The other thing I'm very grateful for is that I've like come in here from that first meeting. From that first meeting, there was something in that room that night. I didn't know what it was then. I know what it is now. It was hope. Hope. I left that meeting with a little bit of hope. And I've loved coming ever since that night. I love going to meetings, conferences, assemblies, workshops. I love listening to the story of an alcoholic. And the seedier, the better. The seedier, the better. So I have no regrets since the day I come here, up to and including tonight, other than one. I do have one regret, and that is that I didn't drink with some of you people. I don't know if you've ever thought that or not, but I've walked away from some people thinking I liked a little drink with that guy. We're a cast of characters. You couldn't make some of this stuff up that goes on around here. The greatest show. I went to an AA thing a number of years ago up in Sault Ste. Marie. It's a town in northern Ontario up in the American-Canadian border. I went up there for a little roundup. I was going to talk Saturday night. I got up Saturday morning, went out to have some breakfast. I picked up the local paper. I like to read about the community I've been invited to come to. Only seems fitting. And I'm reading this paper on the front page, a little local paper, that little article. This is a true story. Well, I hope my whole story's true, but... This part is for sure. There was an article in there. There was a man, they had arrested him coming across the Canadian-American border drunk on a stolen street sweeper. And my first thought was, I'd like a little drink with that guy. That is my kind of alcohol. Oh, we got to get going. I was 25 years old, and my wife had thrown me out of our home. And I want to tell you that I loved her as much as I was capable of loving at that time. It's important I say that to you. As much as I was capable of loving at that time. I had a new address every night. I lived in the stairwells in downtown Toronto on Eglinton Avenue. I just went from building to building. I had a new address each night. And at nighttime, I was under that stairwell. In the daytime, I was like a rat in a sewer. Out on those streets looking to score, looking to scam, looking to rip somebody off to get the money I need to get to do the things I need to do. I hear people in AA talk about AA luggage, matching green garbage bags. I didn't have any AA luggage, Wayne. Had the clothes on my back. Still had an ultra suede jacket, though. Gonna be cool at any expense. I'm 25 years old, I'm living in stairwells, and nobody wants anything more to do with me. And let me add right now, nor should they. Nor should they. Because I'm a user and taker of people. I'm that tornado going through the lives of others. I hurt everybody that I come in contact with. I use anybody that allows to get close to me. And I burnt everybody up. Nobody wants nothing more to do with me. My wife had thrown me out. I'm on the streets. I'm in the east end of Toronto one night. I'm all jacked up and nowhere to go, as I said. And my wife and I owned a home in what they call the beaches. These folks would know. Down at the lakefront. And we had a screened-in porch with a couple wicker couches. I thought, I'm going to slip in there and get a couple hours and get out before she wakes up. Well, I pass out, and I wake up to one of these. And I opened my eyes and looked, and there was that little gal that I loved. And she looked at me with disgust and pity. And she said, Butch, you're a useless piece of scum, and you'll never change. And if you cared anything about me, you get up and get out of here, and please don't ever come back, because I can't stomach to look at you. And I get up and I left there. It was a hot, hot summer day. Hot, humid, I'm sick, I'm hungover, I'm dirty, and I'm heartsick. And I walk down to what they call the boardwalk, down on the lakefront. And I'm sitting down there in that condition on a park bench. And over where you boys were sitting, there was another bench, and there was a little boy, 5 or 6 years old, sitting there eating a popsicle. And I looked over at that little boy, and you know what I thought to myself? Wish I had a dime for a popsicle. The big shot. The dope dealer. Everybody's friend, good old Butch, sitting on a park bench wishing he had a dime for a popsicle. Nobody in this world wanting anything more to do with me. And guys, here's the thought that I had at that moment, as clear as I'm thinking right now. I knew at that moment that that park bench and places like it was where I was going back to every single time. I've always been a talker and a hustler. I knew I'd put a deal together, I'd come up with some cash. I always did. But I knew at that moment that that park bench or somewhere just like it was where I was going back to, and I knew it beyond a shadow of a doubt. I was 25 years old. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 33. I had 8 more years on those streets. And I will not bore you tonight with a horror story, because I don't believe it would serve any purpose. You see, if you're an alcoholic of my type, you already know it never gets better. It always gets worse. And I had 8 more years on those streets. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I was 33, and I joined a group. And I got a sponsor. And I did the things you told me to do. Forget this suggested crap. The stuff you told me to do. You know where I was a number of years ago? I was in Rome, Italy. Rome, Italy. Standing in the Sistine Chapel. Looking at the paintings of Michelangelo from hundreds of years before, and the tears started to roll down my cheeks. And I thought of that guy sitting on the park bench wishing he had a dime for a popsicle. Long way from that park bench to the Sistine Chapel in Rome. It is a long way from where you and I came from. Many of us here tonight, the dregs of society. Many of us here tonight, our own families didn't even want us any longer. Yet here we sit tonight, members of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, living good, rich, full, productive lives. How do we get from where we were to where we sit tonight? How does that happen for you and I? Because it's not supposed to. But you know how it happens, don't you? And it only happens one way, and that is through the grace of God. Through a loving God that you've introduced me to through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and a fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous. I will be eternally grateful for what you've done for me. I started to drink at an early age. I hear people talk about dysfunctional families. Was my family dysfunctional? I have no idea. Let me just tell you, it wasn't the Ozzy and Harriet house. I'll tell you that much right now. Most of these people here don't remember what Ozzy, do they? My guy's sponsor, I was talking somewhere and said, they said, "But you're going to have to change that a little bit." They don't know. But there was always a party in my home. Always on the weekend, there was a party at my home. People there, I loved that. And as a little boy, they'd let me play bartender. I could take them beers and take away the empties. They'd let me have swigs. They'd say, "Isn't he cute?" And I loved that attention. So I started to drink when I was 4 years old. Now, I wasn't a daily drinker when I was four. My allowance wouldn't allow it. I actively sought out alcohol. I was 12 or 13 years old. I got a guy to go into a liquor store, get us a couple of bottles of wine. I was going to be a wine connoisseur. 2 bottles of Old Sailor. I think that's comparable to what you call Thunderbird in your country. And I'll tell you, any wine I ever drank had a cap, not a cork. We drank that wine, got drunk, puked, and passed out, and that was the end of my social drinking. All downhill from there. I hear people in Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't know if you have this here or not, but I hear people at home in these discussion meetings say things like that they came to Alcoholics Anonymous hoping Alcoholics Anonymous is going to help them become a social drinker. You hear that here? Huh? Came to Alcoholics Anonymous hoping Alcoholics Anonymous was going to help them be a social drinker. Let me tell you tonight, I didn't want to be a social drinker when I drank. I don't want to be a social drinker tonight. I don't particularly like social drinkers. I find them weird. Weird. You ever drink with a social drinker, they let the ice melt in their glass. That's alcohol abuse. You ever drink with a social drinker, it's enough to make you puke, isn't it? You're having a few scoots, would you like another one? Oh, no thanks. I'm starting to feel it. I thought that's when you put it in overdrive. Social drinker. My wife's a social drinker. Dee, my beautiful wife's at home right now praying for me. Or for you. But my wife's a social drinker. A little while ago, I'm at home. We have an open concept in our home. I look over. Dee's in the kitchen. She's got a bottle of wine on the counter with a funnel in it. I thought, what's she doing with that funnel? So I watched her. She goes and takes a glass and starts pouring that wine in the funnel. I said to her, "What are you doing over there?" She says to me, "I put too much in the glass." I said, "Don't you ever do that again, I'll divorce you." Social drinker. I'm a barroom drinker. I don't identify with closet alcoholics. Doesn't mean they're not alcoholic, just drank differently than me. You know, you hear them, they get the bottle, go in, lock the door, put on the country western music. I don't identify. I'm a barroom drinker. I love bars. I love them. The tinkle of glass, the smoke, the smell of stale urine. I love it. I love it. I like neon. I like neon. I like neon when I was drinking. I still like neon. That's why I stay out of those casinos. They're not good for guys like me. And I got to tell you, thank God I never tried to get sober in the United States of America. I don't know if I'd have made it. God, I love to drink in your country. I love drinking here. You got many more here than we got in Canada. I call them juke joints. You know those divey, scuzzy little rat hole bars, huh? You got some near here. I saw them. I like driving by them. It makes me feel good. Those divey rat hole bars with a little neon sign says cocktails. Oh. I went to an AA thing a number of years ago in Pennsylvania. I decided to drive there. I'm driving my car. My wife's with me. I'm driving through this little town in the middle of nowhere. I'm going down the main street. I hammer on the brakes to my car. I'm back in my car. My wife said to me, "Butch, what are you doing?" I said, "I got to see this again." Guys, I'm telling you, there it was. This divey little rat hole joint had a neon sign. Said, "Stop for one, stay till one." Oh. If I'd have been drinking, I'd have had that tattooed on me. Anyway, we got to go. I'm not going to talk any more about my drinking tonight other than to quickly share with you what drinking does for an alcoholic of my type. It is important that we talk about our drinking in Alcoholics Anonymous. Important that we talk about our drinking for the purpose of identification. That is the greatest thing that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what makes Alcoholics Anonymous work. One alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic. That's why Alcoholics Anonymous work for alcoholics, or their programs work for other problems. We have to have identification. But I've come to believe in Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't matter if I'm drinking Dom Perignon or Aqua Shave. Doesn't matter if I'm drinking in the Fairmont Hotel or under a bridge in a box. It's what drinking does for me that is important. And that's what I quickly want to share with you, what drinking does for an alcoholic of my type. The things that I'm going to share with you, I did not know this when it was happening. I saw it in inventory. I saw it as you took me back through my life and helped me see my life honestly for the very first time ever. But as I look back today, I remember being a young boy in school, 10 years old, 11 years old, and I'd be in that classroom, there'd be a teacher at the front of the room, she'd ask a question, she'd start looking around the room to see if she was going to ask to answer that question, and my head would go down like this, "Oh, Jesus, don't let her ask me." Because I knew if she made eye contact with me, she's asking me to answer the question, and I don't want to answer the question. Doesn't even matter if I know the answer to the question. When I went to school, we used to have to do book report. Get up in front of the whole classroom full of kids, no good. No good. I get up in the morning, I'd say, "Ma, I've been puking all night, I'm sick, I can't go to school today, please don't make me go, I'm too sick to go." Because I want to tell you that I would be absolutely terrified, terrified at the thought of getting up in front of that classroom full of kids. Every decision I made in my life was based on fear. Most of it unfounded and ungrounded, but fear. Where I go, what I do, who I hang out with is all based on a comfort zone. I don't know about any of you guys, but I every now and then would get goofy. I go on about a 5-day run. I come home on a Sunday after being gone for 5 days. My wife would be sitting there waiting. When I walked in, I'd say, "Sweetheart, that's it. No more. I mean, no more, never. I know I said this last week, but I swear my ma's life, I promise you this time I'm never having another drink of whiskey as long as I live." That Sunday. I'd wake up Monday. I'd think to myself, "I shouldn't have said that. Shouldn't have said that." I'd have to go to a wedding that following Saturday. You ever go to a wedding sober? That's a bad deal. That is a bad deal. I would be at that church sweating, thinking about that reception that's going to start in 3 hours. I'm back at that reception and that dance is going to start and I don't have anything in me. And my hands are sweaty. I got a knot in the pit of my gut. I feel awkward and out of place and it is just horrible. And I have to do one of two things. I got to get over to that bar and get a couple drinks into me, or I got to get out of there. Because I can't stand the way I feel. And every decision I make is on that. You want to know what kills an alcoholic like me? I don't even know I'm afraid. I think I'm afraid of nothing. And I'm afraid of everything. And I don't even know it. We talk a lot in these topic meetings. Let's discuss resentments tonight. Huh? I prefer to call it hate. Hate. I know you're not that sick in Florida, but up in Toronto we are. Hate. Hate. I'm the type of alcoholic, I'm out driving my car, I'm at a red light, I'm on the nod by now. That light would turn green and the guy behind me lays on his horn. Whoa. I almost go through the roof of my car. I want to get out of my car, go back there, open the door, drag him out by his throat, take a crowbar and crack his skull open. I know some of you nice people never thought about that, but I do. Now, I'm not talking anger management here. No, I'm talking rage. I'm talking a white rage. I'm talking the kind of anger that you don't have 10 minutes before and you don't have 10 minutes after. But in that moment, I say things and do things to people I never wanted to say or do. Let me tell you who takes the brunt of my rage. The people who love me. Because I am constantly out there seeking your approval. You see, I need your approval more than I ever needed a double vodka, I think. Huh? Constantly. So you don't display that anger there. You keep it for the people whose approval you think you already have. Lonely. I'm 25 years old. I'm standing in a subway in downtown Toronto, young and bluer on a Friday night. And a train pulled up and the doors opened and a young couple my age got off that train holding hands. And they walked off into the night laughing and smiling. And I looked at that couple and I felt sad. Why can't I be like those people? Why has all the trouble got to keep happening in my life? I remember walking through a nice residential area on a warm summer's night, just getting dark, that nice breeze and that, and I'd walk down a street and I'd see the nice homes. And I'd see the television on inside and the families in there, and I feel like crying. Why can't I just have a nice home and a family like other people? Why has all the trouble got to keep happening in my life time and time again? From as long as I can ever remember, I was restless, irritable, and discontented. If I was at this bar, I'd say, drink up, let's go to that bar. If we're at this party, drink up, let's go over to the other party. If I'm married to you, I should be married to her. Never quite right. And I don't know about you guys, I'll tell you, I get one of those double vodkas or whatever I was doing, it was like this. Here, I don't know if you remember or not. I'll give you one more. Here. I did that one night, two guys got up and left. You should see when I do that at the detox. Oh, they're on the ceiling. Beautiful. Love it. I have two or three of those double vodkas. Huh? And I walk into that wedding like I own the joint. And I'm moving and grooving. And I'm talking to the ladies, sitting with my buddies, laughing and scratching. Those sweaty hands go away. That knot in my gut's gone. The rage subsides and the loneliness vanishes. And I get an immediate, not in 21 days, immediate sense of ease and comfort. Huh? And my perception of reality changes. Same wedding, same hall, same people, same food, same music, same everything. But you put four vodkas in me, and that whole place looks different. And that is why I drink whiskey, because I like the effects it produces. But I am an alcoholic. I am an alcoholic. Something happens to me that only happens to one out of every 10 people that drink it, called a phenomenon of craving. And I'd start drinking, I'd end up drinking 60 ounces of vodka, and I'd smash up my car. I go to after work for a few beers with my buddies, I go on a 5-day run, I get fired from my job. I tell my wife I'm going out for a loaf of bread. I run into Wayne. I come home 6 months later. My wife's leaving. I'm out there drinking, partying, carrying on. I don't want to stop. I got no money, so I'm stealing yours, and now I go to jail. And what everybody focused on in my life was crashed cars, broken marriages, lost jobs, going to jails. We looked at drinking. We looked at drinking. We never looked at alcoholism. And people told me from the time I was 18 years old, if I just quit drinking that whiskey and sticking needles in my arms, I'd be okay. And there was times I wasn't drinking whiskey, and guess what? I wasn't okay. As a matter of fact, I was crazier sober than I ever was when I drank. But all those well-meaning people could see, and they were well-meaning, was that when I drank, the trouble that followed. So naturally, they said, stop drinking, you'll be okay. But those well-meaning people didn't understand how I feel when I'm sober. How could they know? I didn't know. I'd love to stand up here at night and tell you I woke up one morning, HFC Finance was dying to lend me money. Work was thinking of promoting me. My wife was sending me flowers. And I thought, I think I'll join AA today. Every now and then I hear some moron from the front of one of these rooms say things like, if you're not here for the right reasons, you might as well drink. And every now and then I'd like to get that tire iron back out. The right reasons? Did you come to Alcoholics Anonymous for the right reasons? I come to Alcoholics Anonymous because I had nowhere else to go. One more time, my back was against the wall. My boss called me into work on a Tuesday. He said, Butch, you're a hard worker. I said, well, thank you. He said, but you're not here much. Picky, picky, picky. He said, "Do you think you might have a problem with alcohol?" I said, "No, but I know what the problem is." He said, "Maybe you share that with me." I said, "It's my health." He said, "Really?" I said, "Yes. Now, granted, my poor health may have something to do with my drinking. I'm going to quit drinking. My health's going to get better. Everything's going to be okay." He said, "You think you might need some help quitting drinking?" I said, "No, I'm just going to quit." Got up and left his office. As to find out later, his wife had been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous for many years. Can you imagine the chuckle he had as I left, huh? He's just going to quit. That was Tuesday. I woke up Thursday in another hotel room. I didn't keep him waiting long. And for whatever the reason, that morning I knew that Jake was up. You know when you know, huh? We have used all the lies. Alcoholics are liars. I don't know what that's about. I will lie when the truth would serve me better. Pathological liar. I'm the type of alcoholic who goes out and plays golf all by himself and cheats on the scorecard. That's not the best part. At the end, I look at the card and go, "Good game, Butch. Good game." So I've used all the lies. I got to come up with something good. I had a few tequilas. I turned my mind to it. I thought, I know what I'll tell him. I'm alcoholic and I'm going to go to AA. And that's how I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And for anybody tonight who's new, we couldn't care less why you're here. We couldn't care less why you're here. We're just glad to have you. We're just glad to have you. And maybe, by the grace of God, something someone will say, something you'll hear, something you'll read, and the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous can happen in your life. And you can go on to live a happy and useful life like so many men and women here have been able to do. Just keep coming. And I've been a blessed man since the day I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. Blessed man. Deep, deep love in my heart for the old timers. Deep love. Deep love. Men and women who've been coming for 20 and 30 and 40 and 50 years, who've made sacrifices and commitments to Alcoholics Anonymous so it'd be here for a guy like me and those people who got their one-day chip. Huh? Love them from the bottom of my heart. And if you are new to Alcoholics Anonymous, I would strongly urge you to get close to these men and women and learn from their experience, because we won't have them with us forever. And I had some wonderful people. I've heard people in Alcoholics Anonymous say you should never put people on pedestals. Well, you do what you need to do. But let me tell you something. I have some people on pedestals. Giants in our program. Giants. Never for a moment have I lost sight of their humanities. The greatest gift my sponsor, Archie Bob Dobbs, and the greatest gift that old man ever gave me, it wasn't some profound thing he pulled out of the book, some spiritual wisdom he laid on me. The greatest gift that old man ever gave me was he allowed me to see his warts. He allowed me to see him get afraid. He allowed me to see him get angry. He allowed me to see him get selfish. He allowed me to see all of him. Because if he hadn't, and you don't continue to, I will never measure up. Bill Wilson said we're much more brothers and sisters in our defects than we are in our virtues, aren't we? And I had some wonderful people come into my life, none more than my sponsor. I've heard people in Alcoholics Anonymous say, if you like your sponsor, you have the wrong sponsor. I hear that and I know I'm listening to an idiot. Idiot. I didn't like my sponsor, I loved him. And I love my sponsor today. You see, you're the first people who helped me understand what my problem was. I don't know about any of you, but when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't have a clue what my problem was. Now, I had been told what my problem was. A lot. My wife told me what my problem was. My parents told me what my problem was. Judges told me. I'd heard all my life, just quit drinking. You were the first people that said, kid, drinking's not your problem. It's your solution. How I feel when I'm sober is my problem. Sober. I'm restless, irritable, and discontent. Sober, I can't form true relationships with others. Sober, I'm prone to misery and depression. Sober, I can't seem to make a living or be of use to others. Sober, I'm full of fear and unhappy. That's how I am sober. Fellow alcoholics, that is a spiritual malady. That is alcoholism. Crash cars, broken marriages, lost jobs, a result of too much drinking. I didn't have a clue. And you told me that not drinking and not treating the illness and sitting in AA meetings does not treat the illness. That's a great myth that kills many alcoholics. The meetings are where the fellowship is. The meetings are where the solution is. The 12 Steps Alcoholics Anonymous treat alcoholism. And an alcoholic of my type, not drinking and not treating that illness, sober, will get so restless, irritable, and discontent that eventually, and that's the key word, eventually, has to do one of two things. I don't have a choice. I have lost the power in choice. I don't have a choice. I've lost it, and I have to do one of two things, either drink again or blow my brains out. Most of us drink again, but we all know somebody who's paid the supreme price, don't we? Didn't have a clue. Didn't have a clue. You told me that selfishness and self-centeredness was the root of my troubles. And I had no idea. I thought I was a nice guy when I got here. I really did. If you'd asked me what kind of a guy, I'd have said, I'm a swell guy. I'm a good guy. I'm a good guy. You could have hooked me up to a lie detector test and asked me that. That needle would not budge. I fully believe that. You want to know why I believed it? Because I've always judged myself by my intentions. You see, my intentions were good, although my actions didn't line up. And the world judges us by our actions. Selfishness is the root of it. And from that selfishness and self-centeredness comes 100 forms of fear and all my resentments, but all based in self. And you told me that I had to be rid of it above everything else. That means everything. Above everything else, I had to be rid of it or else it would kill me. And there seems no way of doing it without God's help. And that, you told me, was the purpose of these 12 steps in our process. Through some actions that I take and some principles I try to live by, that I could get connected to a power greater than myself that would solve my problem. I thank God for strong sponsorship. I'm the product of strong sponsorship and believe in strong sponsorship. And I'm a guy that believes that without strong sponsorship, my chances of recovery are almost nil. And I want to tell you, I believe in sponsorship is every bit as enough, probably more important today than it was on September the 21st, 1989. Because I have a lot more to lose today than I did the day I walked in here, that's for sure. And I thank God that you took me through that process that we're not going to talk about tonight because we're starting to run out of time. But I thank God you took me through that inventory, fact-finding process. You see, I don't deal in facts, I deal in delusion. I suffer from an illness that at times I cannot differentiate the truth from the false, drunk or sober. I need your guidance through this process. Correct me if I'm wrong. I know you'd be more than happy to do so. But I believe it says in step 10 that by now sanity will have returned. That must mean that up until that point, I'm running from an insane position. I need your direction. I need your guidance. You took me through that inventory. You took me through the amends process, an incredibly freeing process for a guy who has been wrapped up in self his entire life. My entire life. Do we get 5 minutes extra?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm taking them anyway. Just like still want to be liked. That amends process, freeing. See, I don't know about any of you guys, but I want to tell you my entire life I was this way. For a long time in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was this way. And today, if I'm not in fit spiritual condition, can be this way. But I remember my whole life, I remember being a kid in school, a young kid in school. They had the kids who did well, belonged to the teams and the clubs. I hated their guts. Hated those kids. Goofs. You want to know why? I didn't know why then. I know why now. I didn't feel as good as those kids. And then they had the kids behind the school who were starting to cut up, smoking, starting to drink, causing trouble. That's where I hung out because it felt a little sharper than most of those guys. But my entire life, the first thing that I do when I meet you, the very first thing that I do automatically when I meet you, is I size myself up. And I am always better than or less than. Never the same as. And when I do that, I separate myself from you and I separate myself from God. Didn't have a clue. And I do that as automatically as breathing and don't ever know that I do it. I know none of you would do this here. I know you wouldn't do this here. But in Canada, in Toronto, sick bunch. I am so sick that I constantly want to be judging. I want to find something wrong in you. I want to find something, and somehow I can feel a little bit better. Maybe I can feel equal if I can find something wrong with you. Huh? And you told me that it's easy to let up in the spiritual. But I've listened to people debate for 45 minutes whether they were recovered or recovering. Jesus. Smoke starts coming out my ears, for God's sakes. But I thank God in the book you told me it is easy to let up in the spiritual program of action and to rest on our laurels. And if I do, I'm headed for trouble. Because I'm not cured of alcoholism. Not cured. What I have is a daily reprieve. Daily reprieve. And I'll tell you, it is easy to let up in the spiritual. The insidiousness of alcoholism. And I see a lot of people run around frantic. I can run around frantically in AA and still not be taken action. Still not be action is about change. Action is about change. Not just frantically running around. Action is action with purpose behind it. And I thank God. And you introduced me to a loving Father, a loving God. Incredible gift, huh? Chuck Chamberlain used to say, we have one problem and only one problem. That's all we have is one problem. And from one problem comes all our other problems, but we just have one. And that one problem is a conscious separation from God. That is our problem. When I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was never a disbeliever. If you'd have said to me, do you believe in God? I'd have said to you, yes, I do. And God was way up there in heaven. He had long hair and a big beard and a big stick. Huh? I'd say Charlton Heston, but they don't know who I'm talking about. Right? Big step. And if you are good, good things happen. And if you are bad, bad things happen. Huh? Well, if God's way up there and I'm down here, have you ever heard more of a conscious separation in your life? You were the first people that said to me, no, kid. Deep down inside of every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. And in the final analysis, it is only there that He may be found. And the great reality is my Creator has entered my heart and lives in a way that's indeed miraculous. You introduced me to this power. Huh? Don't you love Bill's writing? Huh? Dave, don't you love Bill's writing?
I do.
I know you do. I know you do. When it says we will suddenly realize that God is doing it. Suddenly. He didn't just say we'll realize suddenly. We're often talking about Bill's white life experience and that. I don't think his experience was much different than anyone else's. I think all of it, I know many in this room know exactly what I'm talking about. If you don't, I pray God you stay till you do. But you know that moment? You know that time? When you hear something and the tears... I drive down that highway, going to Pearson International Airport to be with you guys. I drive down that highway. I stick a little Lynyrd Skynyrd in, Freebird. And I drive down that highway and that sun's shining. And I think of you. And I think of what you've done for me. And those tears start to roll down my cheeks. And I am present of the consciousness, a conscious thing of God. Conscious of God's presence. And we go from believing in God to experiencing God. See, if believing in God was enough, we'd only need two steps. I can go to a lot of treatment centers tonight and say, you believe in a higher power? Oh yeah, I believe. And be drunk next week. There's a big difference in believing and being connected to. And that experience becomes real. And we are then connected to real power. The kind of power that changes lives. The kind of power that brings us back from the depths of alcoholism to citizens of the world again. You've done that for me by listening to your stories and through the actions of these 12 steps. That's why we tell our stories in Alcoholics Anonymous. That is the purpose in our own language and from our own point of view. How we're able to find a power greater than ourselves. You've given that to me. And the great paradox that if we want to keep it, we got to give it away. Huh? The great paradox. That nothing ensures us immunity from drinking like intensive work with other alcoholics. When all else fails, this works. The occasional good deed is not enough. Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depends upon our constant thought of others. Unless I continue to enlarge and perfect in my spiritual life through unselfish acts and helping others, I will surely drink when I hit those certain low spots. If you've come to Alcoholics Anonymous and had the good fortune to come and just get this thing and stay in or sober a couple of years and everything's going wonderful, buckle up. Buckle up. Life will happen. Life will happen. Huh? I'm going to be done in 5 minutes. Okay. 5 minutes. I'll take it 10. 5 minutes. I just want to share a couple quick things. We've been blessed, haven't we? Huh? We've been blessed. We've been blessed. If you and I hadn't already been given enough, and we've been given much, we are then given the ability to change people's lives. That's not an ego statement. That is a statement of gratitude. That is a statement of humility. You and I, when armed with facts about ourselves, that's what this process is doing. That is the purpose behind this process, to arm me with facts about myself so I can go to be of maximum service to God and those about us. That's our real purpose here. Armed with those facts and have this solution, are able to make the difference in a few short hours and when nobody else was able to. And until such an understanding happens, little or nothing can be done for the alcoholic. You and I are uniquely gifted to help other alcoholics. Uniquely gifted. What an incredible gift we've been given, huh? It says in our book that alcoholics laugh at sometimes seemingly tragic situations. You ever wonder sometimes what visitors might think of us? I don't know if you do this here or not, but when we celebrate our birthdays at home, you get to pick the speaker and the players in the meeting and that. Maybe some family comes, some people from work, never been to AA before, don't know anything about AA. Huh? Can you imagine what they're thinking? Some monkey like me gets up here, stands up here and says things like, "Yes, I bought a brand new Cadillac, picked it up at 9 o'clock in the morning and totaled it at 10. Laugh, laugh. I've been in 18 treatment centers. I've had 27 shock treatments. I'm twitching. Laugh, laugh, laugh. I got a buddy that talks from California, talks about spilling a bottle of whiskey in his bed and then sucking it out of the sheets. We laugh, laugh. You ever wonder what those visitors might be thinking? Says we laugh at sometimes seemingly tragic situations. Know what it says after that? Huh? Why shouldn't we? Why shouldn't we? Because we've recovered. We've recovered. And been given the power to help others. God's power, not my power. My life before coming to Alcoholics Anonymous had absolutely no meaning or no purpose to it whatsoever. None. I don't know about you, it's none of my business, but I was either drunk, planning on getting drunk, recovering from being drunk, in trouble, trying to get out of trouble, planning on more trouble. I work all week so I can drink all weekend. I deal so I can do. That's my life. And all the people in my life are the same. Alkies don't hang out with social drinkers. No meaning, no purpose. I go to a detox at home. I've been going for 25 years. Not because I'm wonderful. I'm some saint. It's the way I've been taught. It's the way I've been taught. But I go there every Monday, and I like to go Sundays if I'm in town. I'm not in town that much on Sundays. But I go, and I like to take new people to speaker meetings so they can listen. I happen to think it's good for new people to listen. I know it's not that fashionable today, but I happen to think it's good. Anyway, I go there one day. There's a guy in there in bad shape. I'm not talking hungover detoxing. I'm talking physically. I thought, this guy might die. He might not make it. Well, I figured to myself, he could die at the meeting as easy as he could die in the detox. Dying's dying, right? Got to die somewhere. Come on, let's go. Act accordingly. So I took him to the meeting. After the meeting, we spent an hour or so together talking about this design for living that we have, this practical program of action. I left him. I never saw him again. Sitting in a meeting one day, I could see this guy coming across the hall. I could see he's coming for me. Clean-cut looking guy, had a pair of slacks, shirt on. Come walking up. He said, "Butch, you probably don't remember me." I said, "I'm sorry, I can't say that I do, but I meet a lot of people." He says, "My name's Ziggy." I said, "Holy smokes." That's not really what I said. What I say here. I have respect for this podium. But I said, "Holy smokes." He says, "You remember me?" I said, "Oh, I remember you. It's the guy, and he's looking good." He said, "Butch, I just want to come and thank you for taking me to that meeting that morning. I haven't had a drink since that day. It's almost been a year." I said, "Congratulations." He said, "I was wondering if I can ask a favor of you." I said, "If I can do it, I will." He said, "Will you come and talk at my AA birthday?" I said, I'd be honored to do that. I went a handful of years ago and talked to the group. I got up the front. I started crying. I couldn't get started. And I'll tell you why. I looked out and they're sitting at the front table in a suit and tie, looking like $1 million, with his wife and all his children, was Ziggy. And he was getting his 15-year medallion. Took him to his first meeting, talked to this 1 year, talked to this 5 year, talked to this 10 year, talked to this 15 year, and there I was a couple years ago. Ziggy's 20. You think my life doesn't have meaning? You think my life doesn't have purpose? My life is so rich. It is so full. I've got a gal at home I love as much as life itself. I have friends all over the world. I could stand up here for the next 2 hours. I'd be all alone, but I could do it. Talking to you about things that have happened. Things that have happened in my life since I came to this program and did the one thing, and we're done. The one thing. Don't you love we read how it works? The greatest piece of literature ever written. Huh, Dave? Greatest piece of literature ever written. Absolutely, buddy, for you and I. Don't you love at the end of the steps? Whoa. Whoa. What an order. I can't go through with it. Don't you love what it says after that? Don't worry. Don't worry. None of us can. I can't. Wayne can't. Bill couldn't. Bob couldn't. And none of us. As a matter of fact, none of us is able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. The point is we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. Huh? We practice. We pray. Some days we do better than other days, but we keep going. But the one thing here we do 100% is that first step. That we admitted to our innermost self. Our innermost self. That I was alcoholic, my life would become unmanageable. I can go to any detox center, any treatment center in the world tonight and say, you powerless over alcohol or drugs? Oh, yes, sir, I am. They all know it here. I need to know it here. I need to know in the depth of my soul that my life depends on being here with you people taking these actions. Huh? I'll tell you what I think that first step is about and the key to being clean and sober. For those folks that are new, it's about surrender. Surrender. I'm done. I'm finished. No more tough guy. No more big shot. No more Mr. Know-it-all. I'm done. I don't want to live this way anymore. I'll be right there. I want to live the way you're living. Will you please help me? Will you please help me? And I become willing to do whatever it is you tell me I have to do. I don't need to like it. I don't need to agree with it. I don't need to think it's good for me. I just need to do it. And when I do that, I'm starting to walk on the sunny side of the street. I want to thank the group for the opportunity and privilege of being here, for you guys and your patience and listening to me. You know, I don't know what's going to happen from here on in, and none of us know for sure, do we? You see, just because we get sober and become members of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, life doesn't stop happening. People die. Relationships end. Businesses fail. People get sick. Life goes on. But I'll tell you something. Every single morning for many, many years now, I say to my friend upstairs, first thing in the morning, I say, if you see fit, I sure would appreciate it if you keep me in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because my dear friends, there's no place in this world I'd rather be than right here with you fine, fine people. Thank you and God bless you.